Welcome to Teleforum, a podcast of the Federalist Society's practice groups. I'm Dean Reuter, Vice President, General Counsel, and Director of Practice Groups at the Federalist Society. For exclusive access to live recordings of practice group Teleforum calls, become a Federalist Society member today at fedsoc.org.
Welcome to the Federalist Society's Teleforum conference call. This afternoon's topic is a Courthouse Steps oral argument Teleforum for TransUnion LLC versus Ramirez. My name is Michael Wallen, and I'm the Assistant Director of Practice Groups and RTP at the Federalist Society. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the expert on today's call. Today, we are fortunate to have joining us Ted Frank, who's Director of Litigation and Senior Attorney for the Hamilton Lincoln Law Institute. After Ted has his opening remarks, we will then open up the floor for a live audience Q&A. Thank you for sharing with us today. Ted, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Today, I'm discussing today's Supreme Court oral argument in TransUnion versus Ramirez, conflict of interest disclosure. I have clients currently adverse to clients represented by counsel for the respondent in several courts of appeals right now, so take what I say with the appropriate grain of salt. The Fair Credit Reporting Act, which this case is a jury verdict from, permits actual or statutory damages for violations. Credit reporting agencies are required to follow reasonable procedures to assure, quote, maximum possible accuracy when preparing a consumer report. They're also required to clearly and accurately disclose to the consumer all information in the consumer's file, along with a summary of rights. But as we know from the Supreme Court case of Spokio versus Robbins, the Supreme Court doesn't think that the creation of statutory damages by Congress is enough to create Article III jurisdiction by itself. A plaintiff must have standing, requiring an injury in fact, one that is, quote, concrete and particularized, and under Clapper versus Amnesty International, not just that, but an injury that is already either already materialized or is, quote, certainly impending. The risk of an injury by itself is not enough. Article III standing requires a concrete injury even in the context of a statutory violation. So in Spokio, a, quote, bare procedural violation, quote, unquote, in a statute without real-world injury is insufficient to create Article III standing in federal jurisdiction. Now, Spokio hasn't been the clearest decision. It holds that intangible injuries might satisfy standing so long as they're concrete. You look up concrete in the dictionary and it means tangible. So good luck litigating that. But the Spokio court indicated that an alleged intangible harm that has a close relationship to a harm that has traditionally been regarded as providing a basis for a lawsuit in English or American courts would count. So for a Fair Credit Reporting Act, you might have something close to a defamation claim if there's inaccurate information on your credit report that's given to a third party. Now, Sergio Ramirez, the respondent here, is the lead plaintiff in a class action under the FCRA against petitioner TransUnion. There's a different person named Sergio Ramirez who was listed on a watch list database maintained by the government's Office of Foreign Assets Control. We'll call that the OFAC watch list. That's terrorists and drug dealers that U.S. businesses are not allowed to do business with, and there are very severe penalties if you do. TransUnion's database flags Ramirez as, quote, a potential match if somebody asked for a credit report on anybody named Sergio Ramirez. And normally that's not a problem. The report says this is a potential match and makes clear that you're supposed to do further inquiry. For Sergio, however, he went to a car dealer. The car dealer got a credit report from a third party using the TransUnion data. And that third party report didn't say potential match, it said match. And Mr. Ramirez had an embarrassing situation as he was buying his car and trying to find credit for it. He was embarrassed in front of his family members, including in-laws, and even canceled a vacation because of the difficulties he had getting credit at the car dealer. So, you know, he might have some potential damages. He asked TransUnion for his credit report, and he got two envelopes, one of the standard credit report and required disclosures, and a second envelope that did not contain the disclosures, but listed the fact that he's listed as a potential match with the OFAC watch list. So he sued, and he sued as a class action, and this was not a class action on behalf of people who had been denied credit or even on behalf of people who had arguably inaccurate credit reports disseminated, listed as potential matches. But instead, the class consisted of 8,000 people who had received that second envelope about the OFAC database instead of getting it in a single envelope. And over 6,000 of these people had never had a credit report disseminated to a third party, and that was agreed upon. But Ramirez argued it should still be a class of 8,000 people because all 8,000 people received their credit reports in this non-compliant format in two envelopes instead of one. So people didn't get their summary of rights that the law required with the OFAC information, but separately. The district court certified the class at Spokio shortly after Spokio was decided, arguing, accepting the argument that the two separate envelopes was sufficient injury to satisfy Article III standing. And it went to trial, and the trial, of course, in this class action focused on the sad story of Ramirez's embarrassment, and the jury awarded very close to the maximum statutory damages of $1,000, $984.22 in statutory damages for each of the 8,000 plus class members, and then another $6,353 in punitive damages for every class member, so the total verdict was more than $60 million. TransUnion protested the class certification on appeal, arguing that the majority of the class didn't have an Article III injury, and the district court erred in holding that only the class representative needed to have an Article III injury. The Ninth Circuit agreed that that the district court got it wrong when it said only the class representative needed an Article III injury, in a 2-1 decision, held that the technical violation of two envelopes was sufficient to satisfy Article III because of the potential harm to consumers. TransUnion's taking that question, took that question up to the Supreme Court. The second question presented was about Rule 23A class certification. A class representative is supposed to have claims typical of the class, and Ramirez's injuries were fairly unique in that he wasn't listed as a potential match, but he was actually listed as a match and suffered real consequences for it, that there wasn't evidence that any other class member had suffered. But the trial focused on those atypical consequences. Nevertheless, the Ninth Circuit held, again, 2-1, that typicality is satisfied so long as there is some common denominator tying the representative and class together. And this is essentially the same thing as the Rule 23B commonality standard, which would write the typicality standard out as a separate inquiry. TransUnion got a cert grant and argued that the procedural violation of the two envelopes isn't a concrete injury in part because there is no evidence of confusion. And so there cannot be standing for the over 6,000 class members who had never had an accurate credit report disseminated, even if you assume that the credit report is inaccurate for simply saying it's a potential match. And TransUnion continued, even if there was standing, the class shouldn't have been certified at all with this sort of trial because of the typicality issues. Typicality is important in a class action because if you have a bad plaintiff with unusually bad claims or defenses, it could unfairly prejudice the class. While on the other hand, allowing a class to be represented by an atypically sympathetic plaintiff would deprive defendants of the rights that due process guarantees because it gives plaintiffs the advantage of being able to litigate, not on behalf of themselves, but on behalf of a perfect plaintiff who can expose the jury to inflammatory evidence and arguments that could not be presented in the suits of absent class members if they sued individually. Class action, you have the class representative, and he's supposed to be bringing typical claims of the class, and then you decide the results for the class based on the claims of the class representative. And if the class representative isn't typical, you get unusually bad results. And this is especially problematic in a statutory damages case because there's no chance of individualized inquiry into actual damages. In this case, nearly everything Ramirez testified about had nothing to do with the two separate envelopes that was binding him to the rest of the class. It was rather about what had happened to him long before he had asked for the credit report and got those two envelopes. And thus, TransUnion argued the class should be certified and the verdict thrown out. In response, Ramirez argued for the Spokio standard that Justice Thomas argued for in his concurrence in Spokio. Justice Thomas distinguished between causes of action for public rights and causes of action for private rights. After all, when the country was founded, you could sue for intangible injury such as trespass or nominal damages for any number of things. And his view of Article 3 standing and injury in fact is that Congress can't invent rights to sue the government over public rights, but when it comes to private rights, it's within the legislative authority to do that sort of thing without the sort of inquiries that the court was requiring in Spokio. Ramirez goes on to sort of argue that typicality is really just a commonality function. They belittled TransUnion's argument about typicality as sort of a Goldilocks standard, that it's enough for the plaintiff's claims to be common, and you can't throw out a plaintiff for being a representative for being atypical just because he's too good or not good enough. He called it the Goldilocks standard because then the only plaintiff who could be typical, representative who could be typical, is one who's quote unquote just right, and argue that the Ninth Circuit got it right on typicality. The SG had an interesting brief on behalf of neither side, saying that there was standing on behalf of the entire class to vindicate the statutory rights that Congress created, but that there were typicality issues under Rule 23A, and there should be a remand to consider those questions. At oral arguments, of course, Justices Thomas and Sotomayor weren't having any truck with the Article 3 questions, but it did seem that a majority of the court would go along with it, at least for the 6,000 class members who had never had a credit report disseminated. Justice Roberts might even go farther, saying that, you know, what's the inaccuracy for being called a potential match? But as Justice Kavanaugh asked respondents, when is risk of harm enough to get you standing? Clapper holds that's not enough. My guess is that there's a majority of the court to say that. Now, how that will actually shake out, how do you certify a class and the class can only have actual injury in fact, or is it just the particular facts of this case where you can specifically carve out people as not having an Article 3 injury in fact? That remains unclear. One thing the justices were playing with is can you simply remand and slice out the 6,000 class members and cut down the $80 million verdict to, say, $18 million or whatever it would be. Of course, TransUnion fought back against that, coming back to the typicality issue. A couple of justices, most notably Sotomayor, bought into the idea that typicality is a trial issue, that if you have an atypical class representative and he tries testifying about something atypical, well, you address it with objections at trial. Don't testify about your personal experiences because that's not typical. And get jury instructions about the specific damages across the class, which TransUnion complained they weren't allowed to do either, but they didn't raise the jury instructions on appeal. They raised the typicality and class certification issues. So in my eyes, at least, the typicality issue is if this plaintiff is typical, then the typicality standard quite simply disappears. It's not clear that the justices understand that that's how class actions work, and we might have sort of a sea change where typicality now gets litigated on a question-by-question basis over the course of a trial rather than at the class certification stage. With respect to the standing question, my initial thoughts going into this were that the Biden administration was sort of trying to parse out an intermediate tone and get the case thrown out on typicality, hoping that the Roberts Court's, dare I say, typical view of narrow decisions might just reverse on typicality grounds without reaching the issues of whether it's appropriate to certify a class where standing is inconsistent across the class. But there did seem to be a lot of interest in the court on deciding the standing questions. So how this comes out is a bit of a mystery to me, but it does seem that TransUnion will win at least a partial victory here. I could be wrong. Happy to hear your questions.
All right. Thank you, Ted. We'll now open up the floor for an audience Q&A.
Please identify yourself before asking the question.
Absolutely. Callers, if you have a question, once you join the line, just identify yourself before asking your questions. In the meantime, I'd also like to give out a reminder to keep an eye out for emails announcing upcoming telephone calls. You can also consult the full schedule of our upcoming telephone calls on the Federal Society's website at fedsoc.org. Also available there are podcasts of previously recorded telephone calls that you may have missed, as well as on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. Not seeing any questions lining up the lines immediately. Ted, is there anything else you wanted to cover about the case today?
I think I covered everything, but I'm happy to answer any questions people have, or if I've exhausted people's interest in the case, I'm happy to close things out.
All right. Absolutely. Well, on behalf of the Federalist Society, I'd like to thank our expert for the benefit of his valuable time and expertise today. We welcome listener feedback by email at info@fedsoc.org. Thank you all for joining us, and we are adjourned.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Teleform, a podcast of the Federalist Society's practice groups. For more information about the Federalist Society, the practice groups, and to become a Federalist Society member, please visit our website at fedsoc.org.